Garrett,
turn on the mics.
Garrett.
GVP.
My mic wasn't even on. They were all potted down.
What are you doing?
What are you doing back
there? Are you sleeping?
What are you, new?
It's after six, dude. Here.
What?
Huh?
How are you, GVP?
It wasn't even me this time, and you're throwing me right under the bus.
I'm doing good, guys. How are you?
Really good. Really good.
Just gonna let Matt do that to you and pretend it was me, hey?
Yeah.
That's fine.
Hey, usually...
Just trying to get to know you better, man.
Usually, who throws GVP under the bus?
Me. But it wasn't me this time, and yet he's like, oh, I just can't wait for this to be done.
Hooby-dooby-doo, where are you? You got a big bag of money. So late last night...
I hope you never try out for American Idol or America's Got Talent.
I never would. I
you
do it
all... You
do
not have the talent.
Yeah, it's a satirical singing thing. I'm very aware that I'm terrible at it, and I do it to entertain the listeners, okay? And I hope that they sometimes get a chuckle, and if they don't, well, that's too bad. That's the way the cookie crumbles. But late last night...
You don't look like a singer. You look like an athlete. We went over this yesterday.
Thank you. Which is also a lie, but I appreciate that. How about this? A little Jonathan Huberdeau extension. August the 4th, the Flames once again burning the candle at both ends and signing Huberdeau. What was it, about 8:45 yesterday?
I don't know.
Things started to trickle out. We got the confirmation from Elliot Friedman. There was, of course, the Ryan Leslie eyeballs tweet earlier in the day, the old something's cooking tweet from Ryan Leslie. And, of course, Jonathan Huberdeau signs for 8 years, a $10.5 million AAV. Of course, Huberdeau had one more year at 5.9 on his current deal. But the Flames are able to sign one of the pieces that they brought back in the Matthew Tkachuk trade long term. And I think that when the deal happened, a lot of people looked at it and said, that's some solid value. But if you end up in a situation where both these guys leave the team after next year, much like just happened with Johnny Gaudreau, well, then what are you left with? You're left with a future late first round pick and a mid-tier prospect. But Brad Treliving goes out to Montreal last week, has a nice dinner with Jonathan Huberdeau, gets to know the player a little bit. And then here we are, a handful of days later, getting the late night media release that, in fact, Jonathan Huberdeau has decided he wants to stay a Calgary Flame despite not playing yet one game in a Flames jersey and signs long term. And we were just kind of joking about it off the air before we cracked the mics open here, Will, as we welcome you inside the big show in the morning. My name is Matt Rose, and he is Will Nault. Didn't necessarily have Jonathan Huberdeau inking for 8 years August 5th on the off-season bingo card as we continue to kind of sift through things, you know, expecting maybe some arbitration hearing stuff, like what's Yakov Trenin's contract going to be? That's kind of what I was thinking we were going to do today. But no, instead it is Jonathan Huberdeau, a Flame for a long time. Thoughts on what was your initial reaction last night? You mentioned you were asleep, so I guess it would have been this morning. But
no, I wasn't asleep. I was kidding. But I do think that for a lot of people, I would suggest surprise. I don't think anybody, even the most optimistic fan, probably didn't think that Jonathan Huberdeau was going to sign an extension. Certainly not in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even when we talked about it, Matt, you thought, okay, mid-season, maybe there's potential for that. Of course, the X factor there is many players and their agents table contract negotiations until the offseason. They don't like to do it during the year. That is just the way it's always been, the way it always will be. Of course, there's exceptions, and there are extensions that get done in season, but it is fairly rare. And I think to your original point about the trade and the fact that, you know, the trade looks a lot better if you're able to extend these pieces, you kind of remove that distraction now going into next season. And you remove the conversation about, okay, if you're 2, 4, 6 points in or out of the playoffs, what do you do with Jonathan Huberdeau? What do you do with Mackenzie Weegar? Now, we don't know what Uyghur's situation is, but I would suggest that this signing of Huberdeau makes things even easier to sign Mackenzie Weegar to an extension as well. Of course, got to find out when True Living and Weegar are having lunch or dinner, but when that happens, you can expect an extension in the coming days afterwards. And then, of course...
Man, you go to dinner with Brad Treliving and pen to paper, it happens.
You get a lot of free Boston pizza, and then you get a lot of money. Get a lot of cash. You know, for a lot of people, just on the fact that, you know, you mentioned we didn't see it coming in early August. I didn't see it coming at all in the offseason. Mm-hmm. Again, I just figured if you're Huberdeau, you probably want to spend some time in the city. You want to spend some time around the facilities, the team, before you re-up. But
that was my biggest thing.
Clearly, this is a guy who, you know, is okay to play in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not necessarily in love with the pressure of going back home to play in Montreal. Mm-hmm. And decides that this is where he's going to be. He's not going to get, at age 30 when this contract starts, not going to get $84 million anywhere else.
Yeah.
And I think that was also a big part of the conversation. Because, look, the bottom line is, Huberdeau's a great player.
Yep.
$84 million over 8 years. It's a bit of an overpay, and it's going to be expensive. And I don't know if it's going to be overly pretty in the years 5, 6, 7, 8. But
a lot of these deals aren't.
This is what you have to do. If you're the Flames, you have a 4 to 5 year window here with your goaltender signed where you want to remain competitive. And this is how you do that. And back to the original point, you kind of avoid that distraction going in the year. But yeah, I think even on July 29th, before the two sides had dinner, when Huberdeau announced his number for next season, people were like, hey, did you guys notice he said for the year?
Yeah,
anybody
right?
else?
A lot of people were picking up on that. And I thought it was probably just a bit of a, you know, English second language maybe. You know, he's a fluent French speaker, and that's kind of his go-to language. I thought it might have been something a little bit more along the lines of that. And then, of course, we see this, and it really just reaffirms everything about it. I think one of the reasons for surprise for me goes back to what you said about, you know, I thought this would come at least when he had been to Calgary and maybe looked around and maybe seen some of the neighborhoods and things such as that. But I also don't think, like, Jonathan Huberdeau is a guy who played in Florida and doesn't seem to spend a lot of his offseason down in Florida. Like, he basically always goes back home to the province of Quebec. So the offseason living probably doesn't mean as much to Jonathan Huberdeau at this point. He can always go back to Montreal. And we'll get to the going home narrative in a second here. But one of my biggest points of surprise was the fact that we hadn't really seen Jonathan come to Calgary since the deal. Like, I think that if he had been here, it probably would have been something that maybe you would have seen on social media a little bit, checking out the city, something like that. Like, the Flames might have wanted to share some of that, and we didn't see it. Instead, it's Brad Treliving going to see him out east, and we get to this point. And we've talked about it before. Like, as someone who played in Florida, over the last 4 or 5 years, you've had, what, 3 trips to Canada? Give or take, because we had the shortened season, you had the bubble season, and then apart from that, it's just one trip up north every time. So,
well, 3 to 4 years, I mean, think about, they've played Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa as well, right? They're in the conference, so they would have made more than one trip. But yeah, in terms of to Calgary, once a year.
Yeah, I don't really, the argument more or less about seeing the Calgary market and understanding what this city is and committing long-term here without coming and visiting the city, that was something that surprised me.
Me too. I thought for sure, that's why I thought the mid-season extension made more sense. But it is what it is, and that's probably the price you had to pay to get him to re-up. As I say, he's not going to get $84 million anywhere else. Bit of an overpay for sure, but it's the exact same deal you offered Gaudreau.
Mm-hmm.
And he's 1 year older than Johnny Gaudreau.
This deal is unique in the sense that obviously it is the most total money that the Flames have ever handed out on a contract. It almost doubles what they gave to Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau when they got their extensions. The other thing in here, as we found out from tweets by Elliot Friedman and Frank Seravalli yesterday, is that there's a lot of signing bonuses on this contract. It's $84 million in total salary, and $61.5 million of it is going to be going out and signing bonuses. You wonder if a certain portion of that fed into the idea of, you know, just getting this thing across the finish line, perhaps. Full no-move clause for the first 6 years. Modified no-trade clause for the final 2 years, where the player can list 12 teams that he's willing to be traded to. That'd be for 2029-30 and 2030-31. Like I've seen people say, you know, the salary cap is going to continue to go up marginally for the next few years, but by the time you get into those back years, it should be going up in larger increments than we're seeing now. And as a result, maybe that 10.5 is something that is a little bit more palatable for yourself. And the other thing, too, is this is a guy that I think, just given his style of play, is somewhat who, when you talk about a Huberto or a Kane or a Gaudreau, that their style of play has a little bit more of a sense of longevity to it. So I don't necessarily worry about the back end of this. And he's a great skater, which is something that you also got to look at when you look at this deal. But does it stand out to you in the sense the signing bonus money or the total money that they threw at this player?
I mean, the signing bonus is just because we haven't seen the Flames ever do that. And I know there's been a conversation for a lot of people forever that, oh, this is a franchise that never hands out contracts like that. And you look at the breakdown of the deal in the years 2026-27 and 27-28, the two possible lockout seasons, he's got $9.5 of his $10.5 million salary in signing bonus. It is protected for him.
Yep.
Probably a big reason why he was okay to re-up. And, you know, that's essentially makes it buyout proof. And if you're signing a contract into your late 30s, if you're the player, that's a lot more attractive than straight salary, because you could lose a lot of that in buyout if the team were to go down that road.
And I did want to kind of get this out here as well, because Ryan Pike had the signing bonuses for recent Flames deals that he threw out. Always love when Pike gets going on the numbers, gets all the research done.
I don't think Pike slept yet.
Jonathan Huberto, $61.5 million in signing bonuses. The most they had ever given out on a deal previously was Johnny Gaudreau, who got $6.5 million, so about 10% of it in the signing bonus. But like Will mentioned, with the pandemic and how there's, you know, escrow and everything that goes into,
I believe the previous high was actually 7.5.
Given money back. Yeah. Kachuk is a little bit of an asterisk, I guess, cause he was traded right away.
No. I'm not talking about that one. I'm talking in general, 7.5 to Kachuk on the 3-year bridge deal.
Mm.
Right.
Well, Johnny Gaudreau got 6.5. Markstrom got 5. Backlund 4. Geo 4. Monahan 3.5. Hanifin 3. And Coleman got $1 million right when he signed the first year of that current deal that he's on as well. But it's significant. And it's something that a lot of players are looking for right now, because there's a little bit of a different kind of protection on it from the money that the players owe back to the owners, given the pandemic and everything else that is going into just getting this thing kind of back on track and used to not only a normal schedule, but just kind of a normal workings of the NHL. The one thing I was going to ask, and we can kind of park our Huberto conversation here for a second after.
I just want to isolate one text on the text line.
Yeah, by all means, fire away.
Don't you get the feeling this could be a sign-and-trade for this year's playoff push? No. No, I do not think this is a sign-and-trade, even in the slightest.
No. This is a guy...
Come on, Kevin, you're better than that.
These guys are... They're going for it. How many times has Will said, this isn't a team that ever wants to rebuild, and if you needed another example...
And why would Huberto sign that if he wants to go elsewhere?
It doesn't make any sense, because like, he'll have some control.
Hey, I could get the pick of the litter next year in free agency,
like, players
or
don't,
I'll re-sign.
Players don't like just signing contracts to get traded. Like, it's not a good thing to do. You don't like having that hanging over your head of, you have no idea where you're going to go. Mm-hmm. You have to totally uproot your life. Like, it's a massive deal. It's not just hit A on your controller and accept the deal and buddy moves over. Like, there's a lot that goes into these type of things.
Yeah. No, I don't get the feeling in the slightest it's a sign and trade. Then this one's interesting. Good morning, Jen. Same amount of contract as Johnny Gaudreau. Same point total as last season. Bigger, stronger, plays a full 200-foot game.
That's not necessarily...
It's actually false. He's not a great defensive player. Aside from
his
this past season...
metrics were okay last year.
Not
they were
fantastic,
better.
Though.
They got better than
and
they were the year before.
They will get better under Sutter, no doubt about it.
He also has shown that he actually wants to be better. Like, when you ask to go on the penalty kill... That shows that you care about being better in that sense.
Aside from this past season, unlike Gaudreau, he doesn't disappear come playoffs. Smart signing on both sides. Have a good one, boys. That's from John. Apparently, John's been dialed into Florida Panther playoff games. Huberto had one goal in 10 playoff games last year.
Yeah, he wasn't great in the playoffs.
And he actually admitted that he hasn't been fantastic. But that being said, I do think that he's a guy that you're probably going to be thrilled to be watching over the next... 8 to 9 years.
Can we stop with the going home narrative now? Because we've seen three instances this offseason where an individual could have and chose not to. Gaudreau, like we've heard in interviews, was going to New Jersey until Columbus called at the 11th hour and he said, I don't want to play close to home. It's too close to home. Matthew Tkachuk really had the opportunity to strong-arm his way to the St. Louis Blues. He could have done that. Instead, he opened up the opportunity for the Flames to deal him somewhere else. He saw the allure of less taxes, maybe a better place to win in Florida, and on top of that, not so close to all the friends and family. And then with Jonathan Huberto, as soon as he gets traded out of Florida, everyone's already saying he's going to be there for 1 year, and then he's going to sign with the Montreal Canadiens. But once again, a player decides to sign somewhere else, and he could have very much not signed this deal, waited, gone to free agency, and then gone back to Montreal. All three of these players, quite easily, I would argue, had the opportunity to go home and play closer to home and chose not to. So can we stop with that narrative?
No, it'll never stop.
In all seriousness, when was the last time that, John Tavares, and then what? I just think it's a false narrative because there's way too much pressure when you're at home from friends, family, and everything else. Players don't actually want to be that close to home. They won't. Close, sure. Closer,
the
yes.
The only thing I would
but
push...
But actually going home, we don't see players actually do it.
The only thing I would push back on there is Gaudreau did want to go home. Philly was his number one choice. He wanted to go there. It didn't work out because Philly didn't have the cap space, but he wanted to go to Philadelphia. So the only thing I would push back on is that. Now, ultimately, he settles and goes into Columbus, and I think he's going to be, I think, happy to not be right in his backyard. But for me, you can never convince me anyways, and you listening and you, Matt, could be different, but it's very clear to me his number one choice is Philadelphia with a bullet. Didn't work out, and he had to go to Columbus. But in the grand scheme and the larger scope of your point, I think is understood. I don't think that it's necessarily always number one for players to go play in their backyard.
And my other argument there is that there's I think it's more of the immediate family that's out in New Jersey aspect of it. He grew up kind of closer to Philadelphia, but spends a lot of his time kind of out in Jersey and on the Jersey Shore. So that's a little bit more why I would kind of consider that maybe his home. And he's kind of got two with Philadelphia and Jersey, but the point is heard. But all three of these guys had the opportunity to go closer to home, be around friends and family, do all that gambit and the entire thing, be a big-time celebrity and whatnot. They still will be in their own markets, but
a lot of Maple Leafs have signed home though, right? Simmons from the area, Jason Spezza from the area.
Late in their careers,
for
though.
Sure.
They're basically
for sure.
Chasing cups at this point, and I would argue that it's
no better place to chase a cup than the team who hasn't won a series in 18 years.
But look at the roster; it's a roster that you would expect. To
and
win
they've
with.
Got Matt Murray as their goaltender this year.
It's
gonna,
it's gonna
that'll be,
be
the guy to fix it.
Kind of gross, actually, but. Yeah, exactly. Gio's another one. Yeah, but he was 38. These guys are in their 30s. They're signing their 35-plus year. Aren't guys
Brett
who are going there in
Brett
their free
Kulak
agency.
Signed at home at Edmonton.
Okay. Sure. He got that big money. What do you get? Eight by 6.5? Is that what he got in Edmonton? That big money deal?
Don't believe he got eight, no.
No? He didn't? It was more of a mid-tier NHLer deal that was very appropriate for him. 4 years under $3 million.
You seem upset. You okay?
No, I'm not upset. I'm just saying it's not in the same...
okay.
It's not nearly in the same tier.
Oh, okay.
But he is home, I guess, in a sense, because he did come home to Canada.
And who cares?
I guess if you want to look at it in that sense, that is a good thing. Boom. I'll get to the text line. Hubie is going home. It's Calgary. Yep, new home is Calgary. You love to see it. What about every player from Montreal? I guess maybe Pierre-Luc Dubois is the guy that we could look at and say he actually
hasn't even
does
gone home
go
yet,
home,
though.
But he hasn't even done it yet. And also, I don't know. I feel like that's going to bomb if he goes to Montreal. Like, this is a guy who's already had trouble finding it in Columbus and Winnipeg and some pretty decent, a decent team in Winnipeg, and now he wants to leave. I don't know. It just feels like hockey and winning games is sometimes secondary for Pierre-Luc Dubois. Great trade by Chalevin, but let's not forget Florida decided these two players couldn't get them to the next level. They would know the players better than anyone. They could have re-signed Jonathan and chose not to. The one thing I'll say on that, so remember we had Jason Bukala on, 10 days ago? Something like that? He was the...
Jason Bukala is not ringing a name.
Oh, this was the day that Will wasn't here. So what day were you away? That was like
no idea.
For The Bachelor? That was last weekend? Something like that? We had Jason Buchla on. He was doing a lot of the coverage for Sportsnet on the TV. He is a former scout with the Predators, director of amateur scouting for the Florida Panthers as well. And he was there when he arrived right after the team drafted Jonathan Huberdeau. So he knows the player very well. We had a great interview with him. The text line loved it. It was a great conversation. He had a lot of insight on all these players. And he actually texted me yesterday, right after the deal went through, and said he was surprised it got done before Uyghur, and this is some great value for the Calgary Flames. So a guy that knows the player very well said that this is a home run for him. So as much as yes, you're saying that the Florida Panthers, who knew this player, decided they would trade him, someone else who's also been in that organization for a long time reached out yesterday and said that he really liked how this deal looked.
This one says, Sutter signed at home?
Yeah, that's also not the same.
That kind of is, though.
Kind of, but I would also consider it kind of cup chasing. Like, he wasn't going to sign anywhere else. He had two places he wanted to go, and they were legacy places where he wanted to bring a cup back. So it's kind of cup chasing. It's kind of a guy, like, if he didn't sign like a 6-year big money deal.
But I can tell you this, he's coaching for a lot cheaper because it's Calgary.
Exactly. That's my point.
Yeah. But he still signed at home. He wanted to come home.
But once again, you're coming up with examples that aren't relevant to the point I'm trying to make. I'm talking about big name NHL players.
Andrew Kopp signed in his hometown, Detroit. There's one for you.
There is one. And I guess Andrew Kopp is on the same level as Huberdeau and Gaudreau and Tkachuk now.
Well, he's just bringing up. You can't change your move your goalposts here, Matt. Come on.
No, that's a good one. Because he's going to be a good player there, too. And I actually like the way Detroit's going as well.
A couple more at 960-960. I saw this a couple of times, and actually it's funny. I was texting with some people late yesterday and then this morning on this very same subject. I don't know if that's going to end up being the plan for Calgary, but you look at this team. We've talked about it a lot. We've talked about players on this roster. He's signed the biggest deal in Flames history and hasn't played a game for them yet. It might not be this season. It might be year one of his new deal. But now that he is very clearly the longest tenured Flame, like, what are the chances? How would you handicap Jonathan Huberdeau as the next captain of this team?
Oh, I don't know. I think it's way too early. Once again, I thought he would play a few games in a Flames jersey before he ended up signing. I think it's a little bit early for that. I don't know. The thing was, in Florida, it was always Alexander Barkov, and Huberto kind of did assistant captain stuff and all that jazz, but I don't know. I've watched Florida Panthers hockey, but I am not going to sit here and say I usually tune in for a lot of the post-game pressers and that type of thing, and that is kind of something that I also think about when I ponder a captain. It's not necessarily going out and just, you know, doing everything on the ice. It's a very important factor of it. But you're also kind of the conduit from the team to the coaches, the media to the team, and all that type of stuff. And that's an important role as well.
So you're saying no?
I would see it unlikely at this point. I'd be willing to be proven wrong, but I don't necessarily see I don't think that's coming in the near future.
Tell you who is happy, Brent Gibbs, director of retail, because you can put those Huberto jerseys on the rack now.
All those number 10s, not for just 1 year.
No, you can
going to be there for
start,
a while.
You can start pressing those jerseys, boys. There's going to be a few of them in the team store for the next couple of months, and I'm sure there'll be lots in the stands as early as next season. I think bottom line on this deal for me though, it's expensive. You're going to hate it in the latter half of the contract, but if you're the Flames, you really didn't have another choice. I don't think. Like, you had to do this. They very clearly are not going to rebuild. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of what you had to do, I think, for the Flames.
Yeah, this is a guy who's been a point per game player for the last four seasons. You're going to get the offense from him. So, I don't know. We'll see. I think this is a deal that, when you're signing people who are late 20s, early 30s, you hope you get above value for the first half of the contract, and you understand you're probably going to get below value for the back half. It's just how these things work.
Mm-hmm.
Take a quick break. Quite a bit to get to in the morning report as well. Jays were in action. Alek Manoah returned to the mound after he left his last start after taking a comebacker off the elbow. We got this Huberto deal to talk about and so much more in the golf world too. That's next with the morning report. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Well into hour number one. Happy Friday. It's August 5th. Sorry. It's not August 8th. That's on Monday. It's August 5th today. 8th month of the year, though. If you can believe it. We're also just over a month away from NHL training camps. That'll be here before you know it. Time is flying. A little bit colder today, but the weekend's going to be hot. And if you don't have weekend plans, maybe you should head out to Canyon Meadows. Check out the Shaw Charity Classic. Begins today, runs through Sunday. All the information, tickets, hours, shuttles, etc. can be found at ShawCharityClassic.com. He's Matt Rose. My name is Will Nault. Speaking of the Shaw Charity Classic, expecting a special guest in about an hour's time.
Right on.
And a pretty cool story. Excited to bring you all the deets on that coming up just after 7:30 this morning. Top of the hour, we'll get into the CFL story with Justin Dunk. But right now, time to dive into the morning reports brought to you by Motorworks. Exceeding all expectations, BMW repairs and service in a state-of-the-art facility where they'll meet and beat all competitors' quotes. On 51st Ave and 3rd Street Southeast, we say good morning and hand the morning report over to Matty Rose.
Marty Rose.
Matt Rose. Matt Rose. Lads, so much to get into. Brad Treliving getting the fax machine going late night yesterday on a Jonathan Huberto extension. A couple other NHL notes. Plenty to talk about in the baseball world, NFL, CFL, golf. We got it all in here for the morning report. And Yesterday night, the Flames signed Jonathan Huberdeau to an extension. They had a feeling that we might get something Flames-related. That when Ryan Leslie dropped the old eyeballs emoji on the old Twitter machine. Always know it's time to turn the insider notifications back on when that's the case. And then at around 8:45, it was Elliot Friedman reporting that the Flames and Jonathan Huberdeau were putting the finishing touches on an 8-year, $84 million extension, an AAV of 10.5 per for the league's second-highest scorer last season, acquired in the Matt Tkachuk trade. He's going to turn 30 next summer after he plays out the final year of his current deal with an AAV of $5.9 million. And like I mentioned, second in league scoring 115 points last season for the Florida Panthers. Yet to play a game for Calgary, but hey, signed for the next 9 years. He's got a bunch of signing bonus, no move clause for the first 6 seasons, then a modified no trade for the final two.
Kind of what they had to do here. You know, you look at this trade on paper when they made it with Florida, you said this is a great trade, but can they get Huberdeau and Uyghur extended? Well, they've got one of two now under contract, and they can get the other one. Means that's a massive win, I would suggest, in terms of the trade. What happened to the music? Just dropped off.
It's a slow fade out the back, and he has to restart it again.
That's weird. It's very odd. Threw me right off. But yeah, I think now the focus shifts to Mackenzie Uyghur. Can they get him under contract past this season? Certainly, you know, this trade starting to swing more and more in Calgary's favor after the signing of Huberdeau. You're not going to like it in the back half of the contract. It's just the reality of it. But a couple of things here. A, it's what they had to do. B, very good chance in the fifth year of this deal, the salary cap looks a lot different than what it looks like right now.
And as I very eagerly look ahead to next season, the Flames have 15 players under contract and about $17 million in cap space. And that would be to sign a goaltender, Mackenzie Uyghur, and another defenseman, or you could bring someone up from the minors, and then they would need four forwards to kind of round out the roster. So you kind of like that number, $17 million for seven guys, one of them maybe the most expensive in Uyghur, and you can probably fill in the rest for, you know, an average of $2.5 million per, if you're really getting eager and looking ahead to next summer. But hey, let's get through this season first. Elsewhere, the San Jose Sharks getting a little bit of business done.
Hi, Sharks.
Mario Ferraro gets a 4-year extension.
You
the defenseman. Oh, yeah. $13 million, $3.25 million per season for the 23-year-old blue liner. Going to be a UFA at the end of this contract now. The Devils and Miles Wood avoided arbitration.
For the Devils!
Terms on a 1-year, $3.2 million deal for the 24-year-old Miles Wood. Only 6 more arbitration dates remain now. Next up is Lawson Crouse in Arizona. That would be on Monday. And we're still waiting on a ruling from the arbitrator on the Yakov-Trenin arbitration case with Nashville. That's the only one so far that has actually gone in front of an arbitrator. But a little bit of business for the Devils and the Sharks yesterday.
Get it done. Don't want that awkwardness of arbitration.
Yikes. Like Trenin is going through. Poor guy. On the diamond, the Jays in action. Starting off a fresh 4-game set with the Minnesota Twins. Alek Manoah against Sonny Gray in the pitching matchup. And Manoah started out strong, 3 scoreless innings before he ran into some trouble. Remember, he was making his first start since being hit in the elbow last week during that Apple Plus game.
Ground ball off of Manoah. That one's going to hurt. But back up is Espinal. He gets it to first. Manoah on the ground for a brief moment.
So that was back on July 29th, but he was back for his usual start. How about yesterday? One out in the bottom of the fourth, then this happens.
This looked like the Carlos Correa that was helping the Astros win games. It's a comebacker that glances off of Manoah, rolls to the second base side of the mound. Manoah, before that ball was even dead on the diamond, he put his right arm out as a stop sign to John Schneider and the trainer, said, "Don't come out here. I'm fine." And now the big man's looking off at the manager and the trainer. They're coming out to check in on him.
He would stay in the game, but that's back-to-back games where he's been hit on, it was the right elbow the first time and kind of the fleshy part of the bicep the second time. He stays in the game, induces a ground out, but then he would walk 2 batters and hit another to walk in the opening run and also keep the bases loaded with 2 outs.
Bases loaded. 1-0, Minnesota. The pitch. High fly ball, shallow and center. Back from the ship. Bichette is there, makes the catch, and it finally retires the side. A comebacker with a couple of walks and a plunk set up a one-run fourth inning for the Minnesota Twins.
Whew, close call, but they get out of it. The Jays would look to strike back in the top of the fifth. Kevin Biggio singled with a couple of outs to put two men on base. That was followed by George Springer taking a walk to load the bases for Vladdy.
Sack still packed. The 2-2. Guerrero pounds it into the ground up the middle. Charging in. Correa's got it. Uses the glove. Jump throw to first in time to get the out and retire the side.
The Jays star grounds out to end the inning. Manoah would come out and pitch a clean fifth. Then the Jays offense would finally come alive in the top of the sixth inning.
3-2. Swinging a high fly ball down the line and left. That ball is touched with home run distance. If it's true, and it is, it's gone! It was certainly hit high enough, it was long enough, and it stayed straight enough to tie the game.
16th home run for Teoscar Hernandez, a solo. Bo Bichette would follow that up with his 25th double of the season, which really opened up the dam.
Out of the plate, and a hot shot right back up the middle. Base hit into center field. Bichette's coming towards the plate. There will be no play. Blue Jays in front. RBI base hit, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. The pitch. Swinging a ground ball. Diving stop made by Miranda at third. He pops up, throws to first. Safe! The ball is dropped! And the Blue Jays get another run. It was a great diving play by Miranda at third base in the hole. He popped up, and Arise left the ball on the turf.
Gurriel knocks in Bichette. Merrifield knocks in Gurriel, the newcomer making his presence known in his first game with the Jays right after he got vaccinated. Told everyone that before the game as well. That would be it for the offense. Manoah back out for the bottom of the sixth, but once again, things got just a tad dicey.
The 0-2. Ground ball out to the shortstop. Waiting back on it. Bichette's got it. Snaps the throw to first in time. Miranda is out. A run comes in. Blue Jays now lead 3-2.
So one run crosses. 3-2 after six innings. That would be the night for Alek Manoah. Two hits against. Four walks. Five strikeouts amounting to two earned runs against through 96 pitches for a quality start, leaving him in line for his 12th win of the season. Tim Mesa comes in. Cruise through the seventh before the Jays tacked on some insurance in the eighth.
3-1 pitches, rocket up the line and left, screaming towards the seats. It is gone! Vladimir Guerrero Jr. blows this game wide open with a missile to the seats in left. A three-run home run. That ball was absolutely punished.
115 miles per hour on the exit velocity. That after Gurriel Jr. and Springer had extended the lead. Put it out of reach. 9-3, your final score. Game 2 will go tonight, 6-10. Jose Berrios on the mound for Toronto. There'll be Tyler Molly for the Twins.
You made that name up.
Molly?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Did you see Vladdy's home run yesterday?
No,
did
I did
any
not.
Of this thing? No?
Did not.
Okay. We'll take a look at the American League wildcard race. The Rays were visiting the Tigers, tied after three innings before Tampa took the lead.
And a liner into right. That ball's going to be in there for a base hit. Here comes Bethancourt. He's going to score. Over to third goes Yandy Diaz. Brandon Lau comes through again. His third run batted into the night.
Lau already had two-run home run. There he gives the Rays a 3-2 lead. They never look back. They win it 6-2. The Guardians were hosting the Astros. Not an easy task this year, especially with Justin Verlander still looking like an elite pitcher. He was on the mound last night. Two hits against, five strikeouts, and just one walk in six innings of shutout ball.
Yeah, playa!
Got the offense to back him to his 15th win as well.
23 hits and 19 in the third inning. That hit well to right field. Going back, looking up, and that ball is gone. Chaz McCormick doing what he does, hitting opposite field home runs. McCormick with his 11th bomb of the season, and the Astros lead it 5-0.
Chaz McCormick, the seven-hitter for the Astros. Three hits, including that solo home run, three RBI, two runs, struck out twice. Quite a night. The Astros win that one 6-0 over the Guardians. The Mariners were off. The Orioles were off. The White Sox, though, they were facing the Rangers down in Texas. Tight game. Johnny Cueto actually went eight innings for the Sox. He was really efficient. Three earned runs against on 11 hits, no walks, four strikeouts, 106 pitches, but ended up being a spoiled effort.
3-2.
And this one looped back of second base. It'll be handled out in right center field. Caught by Vaughn. Tagging at third and scoring Duran. And it's 3-1 Rangers. So a sac fly to right field. That's how it'll be noted in the scoring book. But that was a near disaster out there in right field.
Former J. Marcus Semien with the sacrifice fly was almost much worse. That made it 3-1. The Rangers win it 3-2. So let's look at the standings. Toronto remains in the first wild card spot, 10.5 games back of the division leading Yankees. Seattle's in the second wild card spot, 2.5 games back of Toronto. Then it's Tampa, who's 3 games back. Baltimore and Cleveland, they're 2 games out of a wild card position, while the White Sox are now 3 games back. And some interesting series that we're going to get over the weekend as well.
Like what? Give it to us.
Well, mostly this Twins one that's going to continue because it's a 4-gamer, and that's really the one that we're the most focused on.
That AL Central race, man, it's tight. Those teams are involved in the wild card and the division. White Sox are, I mean, their manager can stay awake. They're in good shape.
If only, right? If only. As for the series that we're going to see this weekend, Seattle plays the Angels. You see what the Angels did yesterday? 7 home runs, set a franchise record. They lost 8-7. Tampa Bay is playing the Tigers this weekend. Baltimore's got the Pirates. Cleveland has the Astros. That's a 4-gamer that'll continue. And the White Sox also in a 4-gamer. They're playing against the Texas Rangers. We'll switch it up. A little bit of CFL as yesterday the week got underway. We also got the Stamps depth chart. They will be taking on the Ottawa Red Blacks tonight.
Didn't throw a pick. Can go.
Several changes for the Stampeders, and some of them not so good, injury related, with 3 players moving to the 6-game injured list. Cornerback Trey Roberson, center Sean McEwen, and receiver Luther Hakunavanu all heading the 6-game injured list. And on top of that, running back Kadeem Carey is on the 1-game injured list. Good news is the team will get back running back Dedrick Mills. He'll start for Carey. Brandon Dozier also returns to a new-look secondary. And receiver Richie Sindani returns from a hamstring issue. Bryce Bell will get the start at center. This one's going to go at 5:30.
I would suggest it's pretty bad news to have McEwen and Roberson in your 6th game.
That's a hot take.
Yeah, not ideal.
McEwen, kind of the heartbeat of that offense. They do have that offensive line. They do have the 4 guys who have been there for a while, and Bryce Bell is a solid player, is a former second-round pick, but it's a big challenge. You catch any of Week 9 getting underway with the Bombers and the Alouettes from Montreal, Will?
Apparently those two teams just wanted to turn the ball over a lot. That's my takeaway.
2 early turnovers for Zach Caleros. First, he throws a pick on the opening drive. Montreal turns that into a field goal. The only points off of turnovers they would have the entire night, despite Caleros having 4 turnovers. He got stripped for a second one, but Montreal turned the ball over on downs in the red zone on the next drive. Then Caleros picked off late in the second, but as the Bombers tried to score before the half, the Alouettes went 2 and out on the next drive and had to punt it off. So 3 turnovers amount to 3 points for Montreal. The Bombers would go on an 8-play, 71-yard drive to score a touchdown late in the first half, take a 7-3 lead. Montreal tied the game in the third at 14 before Caleros would throw his 3rd interception of the game and 4th turnover. But once again, no points for Montreal. 41-yard field goal attempt, bonk, right off the uprights. You really can't let these Bombers hang around. Caleros would leave a drive down to the red zone. Dakota Prukop punches it in from short yardage, allowing Winnipeg to take a 21-14 lead. Then Montreal goes 2 and out again. Every time that Winnipeg would do something, and you'd be like, all right, here comes Trevor Harris in the offense. Time to do something. 2 and out. No good for Montreal. After that one, Janorian Grant would run the punt back for a 57-yard touchdown. That was pretty much it. Doubled up the Alouettes in just over 2 minutes of game time. 35-20 would be the final score. Montreal's now 2-6. They're 3rd in the East. The Bombers are 8-0. And we'll get a doubleheader on Saturday as well. Ticats, Argos at 5, followed by the Elks and the Lions at 8 o'clock. But man, Montreal could have won this one. When you get 4 turnovers from Zach Caleros, you have to make them pay.
Here's my takeaway.
Uh-huh.
Danny Machocha and the Owls, you might want to stop giving the start to Trevor Harris. Dude just doesn't have it anymore. Sorry.
Vernon Adams Jr. on the sixth game, so they but are
even
lacking.
Dominic Davis has been more effective than Harris.
Yeah, it's not great.
Look, he's had an unbelievable career, but
this is a team that also misses William Stanback. Like, don't get me wrong, Jeshrin Antwi, the former UFC Dino, has been solid, but this is a team that misses a guy who, you know, was the odds-on favorite for MOP before the season started. You lose that guy, and all of a sudden your offense goes down the spiral water thing, the toilet. Eugene Lewis can only do so much. He was good.
The spiral water thing.
I
like that.
We'll switch to the NFL, where yesterday, Will, it was the Hall of Fame game.
Oh, really?
Delayed due to weather, though, so you probably had to stay up a little late if you wanted to catch the end of this.
The anticipation.
The Raiders and Jaguars decided to play it anyways. The Jags' first overall pick, Trayvon Walker. How about this? Flagged for roughing the passer on the first snap of the preseason. So that's a fun fact for you, Will. He did have a sack as well. Raiders running back Josh Jacobs started in the game. That was a bit of a surprise. The Raiders won it. Kind of cool for Josh McDaniels, former offensive coordinator for the Patriots, grew up in Canton, Ohio, is now the head coach of the Vegas Raiders and got his first NFL win in his hometown. Preseason, but still cool. The Hall of Fame class includes Jaguars tackle Tony Boselli, Raiders receiver Cliff Branch, Packers safety Leroy Butler, Saints and Packers Panthers linebacker Sam Mills, Patriots and Raiders D lineman Richard Seymour, 49ers D lineman Bryant Young, Eagles and Rams coach Dick Vermeil, and referee Art McNally. In golf, final event of the PGA calendar before the FedEx Cup playoffs.
Swing through the ball and wherever we try to go find it, that would probably be the best idea for me.
So all top 10 players in the standings are really resting up. You got seven Canadians in the field. Nick Taylor and Michael Gligich are trying to sneak into the top 125. Taylor started the tournament at 120th. He's 3-under in his first round. Gligich started at 132nd. He was 5-under, so a great start for the Burlington, Ontario native. Four strokes back of the leader, John Ha. Second round is underway at the final major on the women's calendar, the AIG Open across the pond at Muirfield in Scotland. Brooke Henderson was 1-under after her first round, 5 shots back of the leader. She's about an hour into her second round today. And closer to home, the Shaw Charity Classic kicks off this morning. The Champions Tour swings by Cannon Meadows Golf and Country Club. You got legends across the tee sheet. John Daly will go just after 10. Canadian Stephen Ames is going to tee off just after 11. Last year's winner, Doug Barron.
I never think about money. My wife can spend all that. That's good.
That was him after winning last year. He tees off just after Ames' threesome.
I'm ready to drink a beer now.
Mike Weir, Fred Couples, Vijay Singh, Paul Guidos, Goidos, all in town for a great field for this one as well.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun, and I said it a lot. I know it's probably not a lot of people, unless you're diehard golf fans. Maybe you haven't been to a live golf event before. This is a good opportunity to get it done. Cross this one off your bucket list. The field is really, really good. As Ben Hebert told us yesterday, these guys can still stripe it, and it's still, you know, some very, very good golfers and the biggest names on the Champions Tour, love to come to Calgary. So it should be a fun weekend. The weather is set up beautifully. Saturday, Sunday, going to be smoking hot. So get out there. Support the Shaw Charity Classic. Support charities in our city. They've raised over $80 million so far in the history of this tournament. So should be a fun weekend. I know you're going, Matthew, on Saturday. And
if anyone bring an old man
hasn't been before, I strongly recommend it. The Shaw Charity Classic is a phenomenal event.
And just an update on Brooke Henderson. She's through 5 holes, 1-under today, 2-under on the tournament, which puts her 2 strokes back of the leader. And finally here, we'll just wrap up with this.
Ooh, look out! Let the big dog eat!
Okotoks Dogs' final home game of the season is tonight. They host the Brooks Bombers. Let the big dog eat. That'll go just after 7. Could be a matchup for the playoffs as well when they begin on Monday. It would be the matchup if the playoffs started today. but might be the Fort McMurray Giants who are headed down to Okotoks to face the Dogs when they get underway Monday. That's going to be the conference semifinals. And that's it.
And good night and good luck to you, sir.
That's the Morning Report.
Morning Report is brought to you every single day by our friends at Motorworks, exceeding all expectations. BMW repairs and service in a state-of-the-art facility where they'll meet and beat all competitors' quotes on 51st Ave and 3rd Street Southeast. He's Matt Rose. My name is Will Nault. The text line always open to you, 960-960. Someone texted in and asking, ever been a CFL team go undefeated through the regular season and win the Grey Cup? It's only happened once in Canadian football history to date. Professionally, anyways, and that's the Calgary Stampeders. Did it in 1948. The season was only 12 games long. They only played two opponents, as it was the Western Interprovincial Football Union at the time, the Regina Rough Riders and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, the two opponents. And weirdly and oddly enough, they had a tie in the playoffs, but still won the Grey Cup. Yeah. Very bizarre, but 1948, the only season to have a team go undefeated in the regular season and win the Grey Cup. The Bombers' best start came in 1960 when they started the year 10-0, so they could match that next week.
I thought they were going to lose yesterday. I really
but then
did.
You're like, oh, they're playing Montreal, right?
Yeah, after the third turnover and they just two and out and punt, I was like, what are you guys doing? Move the ball. Score some points. Come on.
Apparently, they fired their coach for poor discipline. I don't know if that changed a lot. They still had some really bad penalties in that game. Kept drives alive for Winnipeg.
And yeah, the one where...
Fourth quarter was pure domination from the Bombers.
Yeah, it was brutal. The defense looked like they quit because the offense couldn't do anything.
Right. So then, yeah. It's like, yeah, Winnipeg might lose. Oh, wait, they're playing Montreal.
Oh, wait,
they're not going to lose.
Montreal, they can't lose the ball.
And very good chance they go to 10-0 because these two teams are playing once again next week to kick off Week 10 Thursday Night Football, this time from Winnipeg. So good luck to the Owls. Also, saw this a lot on social media. Some complaints about a horn in Montreal. What's going on there?
Yeah, I don't know. It really felt like the CFL crowd was just being the CFL crowd. Someone had an air horn and they didn't like it on the broadcast. What?
Did it bother you?
No, it didn't bother me. Are you kidding? Who cares? I barely even listened to the guys on the broadcast.
You're just there to watch the picture, moving pictures. That's all you want.
Yeah, pretty much. And I was also doing two screen. I was going back and forth between that and the Jays game.
Yeah.
Because they kind of started at
the
exact
old
same
two
time.
Two screen.
I knew I was doing the Morning Report, so I was like, oh, I better watch this. And I had nothing else to do yesterday, so got into some sports.
Love it. We got to take a break when we come back. Speaking of the CFL, we'll find out what Justin Dunk thinks of horns. I think he'll be all right with it. I don't know, though. Your thoughts? You look confused.
Is that the right guest? Isn't it Tim Leeper next?
What? 7 o'clock is Justin Dunk.
Oh, I got my schedule wrong.
What are you doing? I'm like looking at you. You look all confused.
Because I have my schedule
wrong. Anywho, we'll get it sorted out. Justin Dunk's next. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.